This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it's Lee Salisbury here. Welcome to another episode of Soap from the Box, the TV, music and film podcast where we go behind the scenes, hashtag set life. We get the goss, the lowdown from all the biggest stars from your biggest TV shows, EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks, Neighbours and Home and Away. I hope you've had a brilliant week. This week's episode is fantastic. It's just been announced that she is returning to EastEnders this summer for some bombshell storylines. I caught up with her. She's one of my favourite characters from the show ever, involved in one of the biggest storylines. Enjoy. My guest today was involved in one of the biggest storylines EastEnders have ever done. Who Shot Phil got a staggering 22 million viewers, and a nation was in shock when it was revealed it was her character, Lisa, who had shot the patriarch of Albert Square. I remember her fondly from the LWT sitcom Close to Home, playing Paul Nicholas's daughter, and also the huge children's TV show Press Gang, where she starred alongside the now infamous director Dexter Fletcher and AbFab's very own Julia Sawala. She has since battled it out with other celebrities on X Factor, eaten God knows what in I'm a Celebrity, toured the country with productions such as Hairspray, and appeared in Casualty, amongst many other things. She is someone I've always wanted on this podcast, so it's a pleasure to welcome Lucy Benjamin. Hi, Lucy.
Oh, hi, Lee. It's lovely to be here.
How are you?
I feel fit as a fiddle at the moment.
Oh, good. Well, that's brilliant.
I'm touching wood now as we speak, though.
So I know. Why do you ever say things like that? Do you know what I mean?
I know.
I'm touching wood for you.
I'm good. All good at the moment.
Let's start with that. I mean, we'll go back in time on EastEnders. We'll start with EastEnders, obviously. Then we'll talk about other stuff. But that Who Shot Phil, which was 22 million viewers. I mean, it must have been... I've been there, obviously. I've been there when... Who Killed Archie, when I was there. It's so exciting when something like that is on, isn't it?
Well, it's, you know, what's so exciting is to be involved in such a massive storyline. And, you know, you really get a sense of when you're at the studios, that there's a real buzz around it, and all, you know, the secrecy leading up to it, and nobody knew who actually it was going to be that had shot Phil. So there was real drama, even off camera, in terms of the build up to it. So that was really exciting. And then for it to transpire that it was my character, Lisa, that did it. But it was really fabulous times, I think, being involved.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was when we had less channels. So obviously soaps were absolutely huge. I mean, so how was the process? Did you get told that you were A, going to be involved, and B, did they let you know quite soon that you were going to be the, you know, the one who's pulled the trigger?
Well, they it was weird the way it happened, really. They started filming scenes where we all knew we were suspects, and we were told that, you know, there was going to be a Phil got shot. But all of us, there was Ian Beale, myself, I think Martin Kemp, I think Tamsin Athway and Mel was one of them. So we were all told that we were all suspects. So we were playing the scenes, you know, which was really sensible, actually, because we're all playing them as if it could have been us, you know, almost as if it wasn't us, you know, because none of us had been told at that point. So we were playing innocently that it wasn't our character. So that was kind of clever of them to do that. And then at one point, I just got called upstairs to say, look, in the next few weeks, we're going to film the reveal of who it was that shot Phil, and it's going to be your character. However, you've got to keep it massively, massively secret from everybody else.
Oh, my God. So they told you not to tell anyone.
Yeah, Tommy, I couldn't tell anyone. So they were taking all of the suspects up one to one, one by one, up to the offices of John York to say, to kind of tell them, it's not you, it's not you, it's not you, it's not you. And they said to me, you know, it is you, but you've got to go down God. And face them all. It's not you either. And I was going, yeah, but then it's, they're all going to go, somebody's lying. And then
yeah, oh fight. No, that's awful.
Yeah. So it was a really horrible thing to have to do, but actually it was quite fun in a way as well. But yeah, so I had a double kind of storyline to play, a real life storyline.
Yeah, that's kind of like a double acting yeah. job at the same time. Yeah, even yeah, harder actually yeah. acting as Lucy, pretending.
Yeah, she got paid for that.
Yeah. And did anyone, yeah. Did you tell, I mean, surely you told him, you know, when I've not had to tell someone something, I normally at least tell my husband because otherwise I would go insane. Yes. Do you know what I mean? Did you tell anyone? What?
Well, I told my mum, so, you know, and she was sworn to secrecy. I did tell my mum. The good thing at the time was I was actually dating Steve McFadden, so he knew anyway, so it was fine. So that was a secret that we could share together. So, you know, that was all fine. It was really important to me that I did keep it secret because they'd invested so much in not having the storyline leaked, and I think that was really part of the success of that storyline, that it yeah. wasn't leaked. Press, and because not normally like little things are leaked and here there and everywhere, you know, often by the publicity department that they want kind of teasers out there, but this they absolutely didn't want an ounce of this story coming out about who it was. So yeah, it was great that it was that I had to keep it secret just in terms of like getting the benefit out of the storyline really.
And it yeah. was actually, it was, I mean, I remember it being a very big shock that it was Lisa. You really didn't expect yeah. it to be Lisa, did you? It wasn't like she wasn't even in the top of your like, oh, it could be her. So I remember it was just like that huge shock when it was her.
Yeah.
Did you find it easy to understand why she did it? Do you know what I mean? Was it quite totally. Easy as an actress? Yeah.
Totally. It made perfect sense to me. I mean, she was pushed to her absolute limits. You know, there was coercive control. It was kind of emotional abuse. And she was just, she had been made to feel so totally and utterly worthless. And she kind of come to the end of her tether with all of it. She just didn't yeah. know which way to turn. And she kind of got involved, I think, you know, with Dodgy, I think with Den, and I think Dirty Den was there at the time, I think, I can't remember. Or it was Martin Kent's character. And so, she, you know, she had access to that kind of underworld. So, It did make perfect sense to me. And what was great was, like you said, the audience didn't expect it because she'd never shown any sort of those tendencies. She hadn't.
No, you didn't think she was strong enough, basically.
No, absolutely. So I think that, you know, that payoff was brilliant in that respect.
And you said, obviously, you were going out with Steve at the time. I mean, Steve's amazing yeah. as an actor. I'm sure it's happened on other jobs. Is that quite hard when you're balancing a real life relationship and a on-screen relationship?
It was quite nice, really. You just kind of, you know, you can run lines together and stuff like that.
I suppose so. Yes, great. Yeah.
I mean, and also, I suppose Lisa and Phil were so horrible to each other. It was kind of nice then to have the opposite side of things. So it was actually quite fun. Yeah, it was sweet. Yeah.
And let's go back. So you joined in 1998. As we said, it was the height of the show. And you were introduced, it says online, as a home-wrecking blonde. And it says the scriptwriters had doubts, apparently, at the beginning, and they kept you hanging on.
Well, yeah, I was literally cast about a week before the character appeared on screen.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had been auditioning. I'd been in the process of auditioning for quite some time before that, and I was auditioning alongside Martin Kemp and everything. And I remember Matthew Robinson, the exec producer at the time, saying, yeah, we want you, we want you, we want you. But then it goes to the big wigs. I think it went to Mao Young. And then he was like, I'm not sure. She's a bit similar to Tamsin. So we're just bringing Tamsin's character in at that point. So, you know, I think Mao Young's worry was that we were kind of very similar, and he kind of wanted to go away from that. And hence, in the end, when I did get cast, they sent me off to the hairdressers. They dyed my hair dark and stuff because I was a blonde at the time. And so they wanted to try and bring the changes. But I think Matthew Robinson had always championed me, but it was, I think, Mao Young that kind of went, I'm just not sure, because they seem too similar as characters. But yeah, in the end, I won over.
In the end, it worked. I mean, I've been there as a director on soap when you've got. It is so frustrating. It's really annoying. Obviously, it happens when you have your opinion, the series producer's opinion,
yes.
then the exec
yeah.
producer, then the channel, and you end yeah. up going, oh, my God. I mean, as I yeah. say, the biggest two people we had to audition for Emmerdale to play brother and sister who didn't get the parts was James Norton from Happy Valley
and
Vicky McClure from Line of Duty.
Why?
And I was like, these two are amazing, and they didn't get the parts. I mean, probably good for them, but that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, because you just got to please all of the people all at once, you know, and you've got to get a tick from everybody. You know, and it's quite a hard process to get those ticks from everyone agreeing.
And it's hard as an actress, because like you said, I mean, I did when I speak to students who are actors and you do some acting courses, I always say you really have to not take things to heart, because literally it can be based on the colour of your hair. And you just saying that, it can't. I mean, it can be that simple getting a part in TV.
Yeah, you really have to develop a thick skin, and you're so right. You can't afford to take things personally, because if that happens, it will just knock you down and you won't be able to get back up again. And that's the thing about our industry, is you just have to have that ability that when you've been knocked, get straight back on the horse and, you know, just crack on and keep going and persevere.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And you saying, so Mel obviously had just been introduced, Tamsin, they quite quickly made your friends. How bizarre you say that, actually. They were a bit worried that you being a bit similar to her, but you soon became really good friends with her character in the show.
Yeah. No, we were. And they picked up on that very quickly. We became, you know, firm friends in real life. And then they kind of just, they picked up on that and they ran with it as a story. So, you know, and my hair got blonder and blonder and blonder. So the dark.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? You ended up.
Got rid of the dark, mousy brown. And then, but at that point, it was, you know, they were very happy about the way things were going. And yeah, and they really took to that. Those two characters forming a firm friendship. So it was great. And I loved all the stuff I did with Tam. You know,
I remember that so well. I don't think there is a friendship like that anymore. Do you know what I mean? That friendship is so strong, that friendship.
Yeah, it really was. And you know, even when I went back recently, with Tam's, all of her kind of death stuff, you know, the car accident, whatever. I mean, I was there for 3 months with her doing her kind of exit storyline. And it was just glorious to work together again. And it was just such comradeship and just being there for each other. It was just a joy. It was a total joy. So I'm really pleased I went back just in that aspect, just to get to work with her again.
And what was it like when you joined? I mean, had you always been? I mean, I was a huge EastEnders fan. So when I joined as a director, the minute I walked on that lot was like, I can't believe I'm standing here. I mean, I think most people, whether you're actor or director or crew, have that kind of experience there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I was a massive fan of the show before I joined. Like you say, there wasn't as much choice on the telly as there is now. So, you know, it was huge back in the day when I was watching it before I was even in it. And I really had to give myself a good talking to in terms of not being overwhelmed by, being on the, walking onto the market square and then going into the Vic for the first time. And just... that my biggest thing was not calling actors by their character
name.
They were so familiar, you know, and you've got Pam St. Clement playing Pat, and it was just like, oh God, Pam, which one is it? I'm just panicking. And you know, fabulous Barbara Windsor, and I just, you know, I just didn't want to call anybody by their character names. And that was more worrying for me than making sure I got my lines right.
I got told when I joined, like as a, like by production, like Lee, you must not call actors by their, you know, it's one thing they absolutely hate. So it even raised it even more for me. I was going, oh my God, I'm going to be hated if I call one of them. And I think I did do it about twice, to be honest. And you're going, because you know, some people actually looked more like their character name than their real life name.
Yeah, it's like, but you know, some people were cool about it, you know, it didn't matter. But I just remember that being my biggest thing when I first started, to go, I must make sure I really know all of them, you know, off camera as well, in terms of getting their names right and whatever, you know. But yeah, I remember it clearly as if it was yesterday.
Yeah, no, I do as well. I mean, I remember being shocked when I met, because I hadn't seen any interviews of people. So I remember I was the most shocked by Pam St. Clement, actually, just when she came up and went, hello, you know, hello, Lee, Pam here. And I was going, what? What's happening?
I know, it's so posh. She was like, oh, my God, I know, yeah.
And it must have been great when you get, what I love about EastEnders is it's the only one who does it on dressing rooms. You get like a proper gold plaque kind of name thing. That must have been brilliant when you got that.
Oh, it's just you kind of go, oh, yes, I'm in. I'm here to stay. You know, that is a sign that they've renewed your contract after the first 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
You go, oh, yeah.
I remember on Curry, I think it was Sherry Houston who said that it was when she went to the shop and there was a fridge magnet with her on. And the woman at the shop went, oh, that means you're at least here for another year, love.
Yeah. It's just little things like that that make you go, okay, yeah, I'm all right. I'm going to get renewed hopefully next month then. Yes, yeah. So little
things that matter. And then a few of your stories will go, I mean, there's so much you did there, but there was Lisa's pregnancy with Phil's baby pretending it was Mark Fowler's. That was quite a big, interesting story, wasn't it? Because that was another nice relationship, Lisa and Mark.
Oh, it was glorious. And Todd Carty is just a joy, the most lovely man in the whole world. So, you know, and I knew him from as Tucker, you know, so from back
in the day. Yes, Grange Hill, which so was also was filmed like, there.
Yeah, and that was like a dream come true, you know, going, oh, I'm working with but yeah, that, I mean, that, I had some such brilliant storylines, you know, having to stimulate giving birth and all
I was going to say that you were giving birth to Louise Mitchell in Christmas episodes. Again, is that, I'm guessing that's one of the dreads. I think that must be the biggest dread from what for speaking to actors who I've worked with who've done it, doing giving birth on screen. A, it's something you never really want anyone to see in real life. And B, it's that awful thing that it's kind of quite embarrassing in a way, isn't it?
Well, you just, I mean, you know, everyone tends to go for the screamy thing, but and you just go, some people don't, you know, not everybody screams, I don't think. Some people are just kind of
push out. Yeah. So,
but we always just go for the drama. But yeah, it's a funny old thing. And you do always want to kind of do it justice. You feel like you have a responsibility to play, you know, something that's so real and that people can relate to. You really feel a sense of responsibility to get it right. But, you know, as much as it's terrifying, it's all, you know, it's also very rewarding about being given
something like that. Yeah. When you're on set, when you do something like that, I mean, it must be really nerve-wracking because that normally, obviously, you do scenes. Now everyone's watching. But when you are the focus of it, you know, and I've not asked this before, to him, when you're the focus, you kind of know you've got all cast and crew's eyes on you, don't you?
Yeah, you know, you're being watched on the monitor all around the BBC building as well.
Yes, so, you are. Yeah, there you are. Yeah.
All the exec producers have got all the monitors in their offices and everything. So you are literally being watched at the time by hundreds of people, you know, that are on the other side of the camera in the kind of the you know, the office block. So, yeah. And then you've got everyone on the floor. And it is, I suppose, a storyline like that. It's kind of embarrassing, really, because you are really laying wide open.
You are. Yeah.
But yeah, and so, and what's nice is that people, you always get a sense that people are really with you and they're really supportive and things like that. People just always have your back, I think. And you get kind of never left alone to your own devices. You just get a sense of support from the whole team when you have big storylines like that. So it's
great. I think what's quite weird is when once you've done one big story or one big emotional scene, it's not that, I always think, to be honest, that when people join these soaps, I've seen it, that other actors, you can see them being a bit kind of like, do I think they're going to last? Do you know what I mean? Because I think you naturally do that and crew do that as well because you think so many people come and go. But then you kind of almost see this, an actor would do a particular storyline and like literally wow everyone. And it's almost as though everyone thought they might not be able to do it. I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? But it's like they then become like really solid in everyone's eyes. It's terrible, really. But again, I suppose it's that constant proving yourself to everyone.
But yeah, it is. You totally have to prove yourself. You know, if you get given the glory of a fabulous storyline, then, you know, it's make or break, really, I think, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you don't service that storyline well, then that could effectively just be... that's you gone. So there is that nervous aspect about where you really do want to do a good job when you're given the responsibility of a big story, because things are riding on you, really.
And did you feel that pressure when you went in? Because obviously, we'll talk about what you've done in the past before then, but you have been in big TV shows. But I mean, did you see the difference of going into BBC One, 7:30 EastEnders? I mean, were people on the street suddenly kind of aware of you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose because I was such a fan of the show, I was aware of its, you know, just its popularity. It's not like it wasn't something I'd never watched myself before. So, it just kind of went up a grade. You know, I mean, I'd always been a jobbing actress and I'd done, you know, some really lovely bits of TV, but nothing that was hitting that kind of audience number, you know, as EastEnders. So things did kind of change. You know, it's prime time viewing and then, I suppose the more that people start to recognise you, the more you kind of realise that it's a different beast, really.
Yeah.
Different thing.
And I think, I mean, I think nowadays, we always talk about this, younger people probably have it even harder there. Do you know what I mean? Because suddenly with social media and stuff, with shows like that where you're so in the limelight, it kind of, everyone's now got the chance just to slate you, haven't they, as well? Which at least, I suppose, back then you didn't have.
I'm so pleased I wasn't on the show during, you know, when phone, camera phones were,
yeah.
I mean, we were paranoid enough as it was, you know, with all the phone hacking and everything, because that was my time. But thank God, I kind of just think, oh, thank God we didn't have the added thing of camera phones and, oh, and social media. And, you know, I mean, you've got to be made of really strong stuff now.
You have nowadays, haven't you?
You go down the route of just not being part of that social media thing. You just, I imagine if I was back there now, like big time, I don't know whether I would actually, I think I probably might even come off social media maybe. I don't think, you've got really strong to be able to withstand.
You do. Although unfortunately, I think our industry's become slightly that, I mean, I've certainly been places where they look at people's social media following to if it's a guest part to see who might bring the most people in.
Yeah, I know. I've heard that, you know, say, for example, you're up against somebody and you know, a casting director or the producers will, you know, want either or of you. And then apparently to make the call, they'll just say, who's got, yeah, the biggest social
yeah,
media
which is so, it's, that's what I mean, to come off is quite hard. So it's a tough time, isn't it, for actors now?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's hard. It is hard in that respect. It's just such a different... It's a different thing now, isn't it, altogether, the things you have to navigate?
Yeah, no, it is. It's a totally different world. I mean, I keep catching up with it. Back to this, though. I mean, so, okay, what would you say? I always think there's giving birth, kind of playing drunk, I think, is really tough on telly. I mean, is that another one you kind of dread? Because I always say it's something you don't, I mean, really, it was, you don't really see yourself, you know, drunk.
I had a lot of drunk stuff. They gave me bundles of drunk stuff. I mean, I don't know what that says about me and what they thought. But, they gave me loads of drunk scenes all the time. And because I was working with Steve and, you know, I'd watched Steve... before I joined the show, playing drunk, and I just thought he was a brilliant
He's
drunk.
Amazing at it, yeah.
Yeah, he's a brilliant drunk. And so I kind of had, I had someone on my side that was good to kind of help and advise and whatever when I was doing my drunk scenes. But it is, you are very nervous about playing drunk because, you know, it can go one or two ways. You can go very over the top. Or you can just tell people, well, she's meant to be drunk, you know, it's not even, you know, people have always got something to say about people playing drunk, I think. But I as much as I found it really scary when I read script, oh no, I'm drunk again. I actually quite enjoyed it. There's something quite freeing about just kind of giving yourself over to something and, you know, losing that kind of control. But yeah, I did have a lot of that.
And then obviously you kind of left and then you've returned a couple of times, like we said. You returned first of all in 2010, and that was kind of lots of scenes in and around Barbara Windsor and leading to Barbara's exit. I mean, again, I mean, I did Barbara's, I don't know whether it wouldn't have, because I don't know where that, I haven't worked with you. So I did her first exit, but maybe she came back because I did when the Queen Vic blew up. But I mean, working with Barbara was... Working with people like that is incredible, isn't it? Just because working with those old timers that have been there and done it, it's just so incredible. I'm so glad I've had that experience.
Yeah, she and she led by example. She really did. She was never late. She was the ultimate professional. And so therefore she had no time for anyone else behaving like that. You know, if she wasn't going to behave like that, nobody else was allowed to behave like that. And she really, and without kind of, you know, really slamming it down your neck or anything, you just knew if this woman that's been in the business for years and years was never late and always knew her lines, well, there was never, you know, anyone else's place to not.
No, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so I love the way she led by example. I was very close to Barbara. I was very lucky that, you know, we were close. I got her totally, and we were very similar in certain ways. Both totally short asses, you know, for one. but yeah, I had a lot of time for Barbara. I really did, and I loved.
She was very honest about everything, wasn't she? She was warts and all. She wasn't a shit. But like you said, same with Barbara Knox on Corrie. You know, if you did a scene with her, she was always line perfect. She was always on time. And as I said, when she left, I said, you're really going to be missed here, because actually it'll go to pieces a little bit, because people need someone like you to guide. They need a guiding light in the cast. With all the youngsters coming in and kind of looking at fame and looking at things differently, it's almost like you need someone who's been there, done it, trod the balls, got here to lead you all.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what she was. Hampton Clement was the same, as yeah. was June Brown, I have to say. June Brown was the same as well. So, I mean, I was in the show when all those fabulous people were in it. I mean, I was so lucky. I really was lucky when I look back.
To be in there with all those. I know. I mean, I directed all them, and incredible. I mean, June, I mean, God, just the memories of her will live forever. Just how you used to try. I mean, for everyone out there, June would come on, cigarette in hand, talk about what's happened in her day for 20 minutes. You're already supposed to be on scene two.
Yeah.
And you haven't even line run. But you didn't care, because I was like, they're the magical memories that I would never forget.
And also, when the camera just starts to turn, she might
be just magic,
magic, and you could just move on anyway. So, you know, there was always time to spare to hear June's stories, because, you know, she was just gifted and she'd just get it done.
Pressure, and she'd also done everything beforehand. If she had made changes, they'd all been done. Do you know what I mean? It was like, she was incredible. Then you came back in 2017. I mean, again, that's another 7-year gap. Had you seen noticeable differences as you're going back? I mean, people say, obviously, it got faster and faster and faster. What did you notice over time going back and having such time away?
I didn't notice the show was particularly any different in as much as kind of the machine that it is. It's always been very fast. It's always been, you know, that kind of pace. But I think it was more on a personal level for me that to go in there just being older and wiser and, you know, not so much where, I mean, when I was there first time around, it was all consuming. It was very much part of my work.
Everything.
Life, my
it was
life,
your life.
Play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was my total life. And I kind of liked going back, you know, this time in 17 and again when I went back, I can't remember, I think 19 or something. And I just liked it. Going there and doing the work of it, but then watching what was lovely is watching as a kind of an older woman, watching all the kids doing what I'd have done when I was was there years and years ago, and you know, and seeing the friendships sort of forming, and you know, some of like they've been out the night before, and so I just kind of enjoyed, I reveled in that kind of thing, going, oh, I'm so pleased it's not me doing it anymore, and I'm just here to do my job, and then to leave, you know, I've got two kids at home, so I do my job, go home, be at home, go to work the next day. It was kind of nice to have that side of things, but it was just my job. It wasn't all consuming. It wasn't my life. It was, you know, something I really love doing. And you know, I love acting on that show. It was refreshing for me. It was a different kind of beast for me when I went back.
I think everyone probably has that same experience with soap. I think no matter what job you do, it is always all-consuming when you first go in, because it has to be in a way, doesn't it? Because it's a total different. You know, it's like you go into a different world for a while, and it takes a while to navigate it.
Yeah, and also, I mean, when I joined, it was at the time the Slaters came in not long afterwards. And so there were lots of young people there when I joined. And so we were all so excited and so bursting with energy. And so it was inevitable that we were going to then form friendships. And then it would, you know, the crossover would be your work and your life balance.
And life balance,
We were all just very much into the show and into being together, you know, 24/7. So, and that's why it was all consuming as well, because we just wanted to eat, breathe and live it, really.
And plus, when you're younger, we could all do hangovers where you could go out and then go to work. Yeah. Whereas when you get older, you can't do that.
Oh, I couldn't think of anything worse now.
No, I know. I used to be able to do almost a night out and go straight in and do a perfect day. I couldn't now if you paid me.
Thinking about that makes me want to gag. When you're younger, you can do lots when you're younger, it's fine. But now, no, not an option.
I couldn't even
not
think.
Not an option.
And well, then you went back in 2019, as we said, mainly Mel, but the main big story was Mel getting killed, which Lisa was obviously part of. And you made amends with Phil when your granddaughter Peggy Taylor's born.
You know, I always thought you'd seen the back of Lisa every time I've gone.
Yeah, and then they come back.
Yeah, and then you get a call saying, would you like to come back and do this storyline? We want to come back and do that storyline. You just don't know.
Well, I suppose you've still got Steve there. You've still got Letitia, obviously Sharon, who's still part of the mix of that. So, you never...
Isn't Keanu back there now as well? Or was he back for a bit?
Oh, I still ages ago that he was supposed to be back, but I haven't seen him back at all. So I don't... Yeah, but he was supposed to be going back, Because I think the last we heard of Lisa, that she had a car crash, didn't she, in 2021? But I think she's obviously lived.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, in August 2001, news reached the square that Lisa had a car crash in France. But
she's in France now. So she's not.
Yeah, she's in France. Yeah, I love that. I'm telling you this. I don't think she's dead. I think that was helping another story. But yeah, you had a car crash in France. There we go.
Oh, she gets around, doesn't she, Lisa?
She gets around. Lovely, though. I wonder where she was, Nice or somewhere.
I'd want to have a really fabulous suntan.
Yes, now you have to say that. They have to send you to Nice for 2 weeks before you go back. That's going to be in the contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's leave EastEnders behind. Let's get to you. You were born in Reading. You went to Redruth Theatre School, which really rings a bell. Quite a few people I'm sure I've spoken to have been there. Did you have kind of a famous people with you?
Kate Winslet was there when
Wow.
Yeah, she's quite a bit younger than me, but yeah, she was there. I mean, our paths didn't cross that much, obviously, because there was quite a few years age gap, but that was quite a big one for her. And you've got kind of musical theatre stars like Maz Murray and stuff that went there, who's quite big in the West End world.
It was always kind of the dream, was it, for you as you were growing up? You saw your route. I mean, a lot of people do when they want to be in acting.
I was very young, and actually I wanted to be a dancer, really, I think, more than anything. And it was my state junior school that made me, that actually said to my parents at the time, I think you should just send it for like drama classes or dance classes. And Redruth was close to Sandhurst, where I was brought up. And I just started part-time at Redruth at that point. And then I think they had a children's agency as well on the books at the same time. And then they sent me up for auditions, and I was getting all the auditions I was going for. And then that kind of, you just, yeah. And then that was it. That my path was chosen for me, really, in that respect. And obviously
brilliant.
I then went, yeah. And at the age of 11, when you go to senior school, secondary school, they opened up a full-time day school. And so it worked. The timing was perfect. And I just said to my parents, that's it. That's where I want to go. I don't want to go to a regular school. I want to go to a theatre school. And because of that, I don't know how to do anything else now. So I'm a bit stuck.
No, yeah.
You know,
I think it's hard, though, isn't it? I think they say, you know, you should have a backup career, but it's very hard because I think you have to go with. I mean, I remember I used to act all the time when I was young, and I remember making the mental decision that I didn't think I had it in me to cope with that side. So I'll aim for behind the scenes. Do you know what I mean? Because I just kind of thought, I'm not sure I've got the drive. And I actually based it on I think I was quite grown up when I was young, thinking, right, I don't think I'm the best looking. I don't think I'm this. And I kind of judged that it would be much harder for me. Do you know what I mean? Which is weird that you kind of have to put your, there's a lot of actors who try to do everything and actually need to try to fit your place, don't you, in a way?
Yeah. Know your niche. I always say know your niche. And I think if you stick to that, then you can't go far wrong, really. You know, just know where it is you're placed, I think. Absolutely.
Basically, for those listening, what do we mean? It's like, know that you're not a leading lady. You might be the comedy part in it. Do you know what I mean? Or something like that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Just know where you're more likely to get cast, and know your strengths, know your weaknesses, and play to your strengths, obviously. But that stands for anything in every walk of life, I think, really. I think there's no point, you know, being a, I always say to my daughters, don't be jack of all and master of none, you know. Don't spread yourself too thinly, you know. Really try and niche what it is you want to do and focus on that and push on through. So yeah.
And you were from the age where you needed a stage, because obviously yours is a stage name, isn't it? And you got your name Benjamin from your brother Benjamin.
I did, yeah. And poor Ben, bless him. People always used to go to him, is your name Ben Benjamin? You know, when he was out with me, he'd go, no, she nicked my name. No, it's her. No, I'm not Ben Benjamin. My sister nicked my name. Yeah. So I was Lucy Baker originally. And then,
and is that from the days where basically you couldn't, you needed an equity card and there was someone already called Lucy Baker?
Yeah. But I think, right, because when I was a little girl, I was a member of equity as Lucy Baker. Now, then I let it lapse at one point.
Who said that? Be you.
Yeah, and I think then I reapplied and I went, no, sorry, there's already Lucy Baker. And I think I was going, yeah, that's me.
Oh, it's that's
me.
Brilliant.
So I think they make, but actually I think it was a good call because I actually prefer my name Lucy Benjamin to Lucy Baker. So
how do you use that in real life? Is that simply your stage name? Because I've got my friend Nicola is in Emmerdale and she's, oh God, I'm so confused by her. She's now married, so she's got that name. She's got her Nicola Wheeler name and her original name. And
I've got three names, and it's so confusing. And with certain things, I'm Lucy Benjamin, and certain things, you know, I've still got a couple of bank accounts where I'm Lucy Baker.
Close to you as well, yeah.
Refuse to close it down. And then, I'm Lucy Taggart as married name.
That's fantastic. Yeah. It's literally the only job that you get away with that. And anything else, it would be fraud. Do you know what I mean? If you had three names floating around. But as an actor, you're allowed it. But your first role as a child actress was in Doctor Who in 1983. What a start that was.
Yeah, that was my first TV job, actually. I started in the West End, actually, when I was about 9 or 10. So, yeah, that was one of my very first
TV jobs. Did you start in the West End? What were you in as nine? What were you in when you were 9 or 10
in
the West End?
I was in a show called Bernardo. It ran for about 3 weeks, and then it was pulled. But it was at the Royalty Theatre in the West End. And it was with James Smiley and Fiona Fullerton, you know, just a big Bond kind of actress.
Yeah.
And it was at Bernardo's, the children's orphanage. So... and I just remember it was that really that made me just go, this is it, I'm done for life. This is all I ever want to do. I got the bug at literally the age of 9 or 10.
Wow.
And then I went in to do Annie at the Adelphi Theatre in the West End then, not long after that. So yeah, so it was kind of, I was going down the musical theatre route to begin with, to be honest. You know, quite singy, quite dancey. And then I got cast as a very, very small part in Doctor Who. But you can imagine as a kid, because Doctor Who was huge.
Huge, yeah. And also because it's a make-believe world. It's like mad to be in it.
Oh, I was so disappointed that it wasn't a real TARDIS.
You know? I'm sure, yeah.
And I had to go on set and they were like, this is the TARDIS. I was like, no, where's the phone box?
Yeah, oh, that kind of destroyed you as a kid, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I was about 11 or 12, I think, when I did that. So I kind of, yeah, all my illusions got shattered very quickly. You know, the glamour was taken right out of it very early on for me.
Yeah, and then Press Gang, obviously, in 1989, which I remember and I absolutely loved. I mean, that was a huge hit as well with kids, wasn't it? That must have been great being in that. And that must have been great because it was like a group of people your age.
Yeah, and it's so, I mean, so many people from that show have gone on to do so
amazingly well.
I mean, it was written by Stephen Moffat, you know, who is an amazing writer.
Yeah, incredible.
That does so much. So, you know, we've got like a dream team going down, and you just kind of knew, even as a kid, I mean, I was 19 then, I just knew something special was being created, and you could just sense this big, big buzz about it. And it was joyous, and that was one of the, you know, that was my first kind of show where I felt like I'd been put on the map a little bit.
Yeah,
And, you know, where it got, you know, the public really took to it, and it was BAFTA award winning, and I was so excited and I was so proud of that moment. Dexter Fletcher is just flying high and it's just so glorious. I'm so proud of how well it's
done. That's what I was going to say. Is it, because I always wonder whether it's, you would be a bit slightly jealous. I don't know, but is it just great to see your old friend doing so well?
Yeah, I think because we were so young, you know, and just see that we've kind of gone the distance, you know, being old fogies now.
I think because you get told so many times it might not work as well, or don't bother. It's actually great to see so many people excelling.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I watch Dex and everything he does just with, you know, scrutiny and just like loving it and just sending, you know, love down the airwaves. You feel proud. You get the real sense of pride with everyone doing so well. I love it.
And then obviously that was amazing. Then you did. I mean, I don't know why I remember this so well, but I do. I used to love it. It's bizarre because Leslie Dunlop was in May to December, which hardly anyone remembers, but I absolutely adored her in. I remember Close to Home with you and Paul Nicholas. I loved it.
That was all back in the day when sitcoms were huge. You know, you've got things like
Around
the Castle, Me and My Girl, you had with Richard O'Sullivan, and, you know, it was just a real time of sitcom, you know, with live studio audiences.
That was live studio audience. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you had the double kind of thing of filming something and then having to perform for a live audience. So, you know, and that was a little bit my training ground, really. Because I did all of those shows. I did Up the Elephant Around the Castle with Jim Davidson, and I did Me and My Girl, and then I did Bottom as well, with, you know, the boys.
Adrian Emerson,
And so I kind of, at one point, I was going down that comedy route, So I just loved it. I loved it.
What's it like with a live audience as an actor? Because I suppose it's mixing stage work where you buzz a live audience with TV.
Yeah. Because you have to wait for the laughs as well. You know, it's really strange because that's
you have to pause. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to wait for the laughs like you would in live theatre. But it's a craft, and I'm really proud that I had a good old go at that. Really. Yeah, it's just a totally different genre. Totally different genre. But you know, ultimately you have to play for the camera, to be honest.
It's quite bad now because you can't imagine. I mean, I know Miranda probably was maybe one of the last really big ones that did that kind of thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's like something that's just not in the ether really at the moment.
No, I'm just trying to think, you know, what is that kind of sitcom? I think there's a couple, but it's not, you know, back in the day, back in those kind of late 80s, they were huge. They were absolutely huge. They were on telly constantly, all those sitcoms. So, yeah.
I've actually just been binge watching recently Keeping Up Appearances and going through that again. And you realise how, the comedy in that. She's just brilliant. She's amazing.
Trisha Mallet is just stunning. I mean, it's a masterclass in comedy.
It really is. And then, I mean, outside of that, you did things like, I mean, X Factor Battle of Stars, which you won. And apparently what I love is I read that Sharon Osbourne actually let slip live on telly that you were pregnant.
She did, and half of my family didn't even know.
She's
just kind of been listening on into dressing room gossip in the makeup chair, you know. And so the production team kind of knew because I was quite early and it was a health and safety thing. So, you know, but she kind of caught a bit of gossip, I think, going on with me and my makeup girl. And the next thing, she just assumed it was out or something. And I think she just saw my face. And I went, and she said it on telly. Yeah, and then she's like, oh, have I said something I shouldn't have said? And it was like, then my phone didn't stop ringing. My family were phoning me going, what, you're pregnant?
God. Oh, what a nightmare on live TV.
Yeah, I suppose it was one way to out it, I suppose. You know,
stopped all those conversations.
Yeah. But,
what was it like doing something like that? Because you did that, you did I'm a Celeb. What's it like being Lucy Benjamin instead of being a part? Do you know what I mean? Is it a whole different kettle of fish?
Yeah, I hate it. I honestly hate it. I mean, The X Factor was terrifying because as much as I started kind of as a kid in musical theatre, I haven't, you know, I've not done loads and loads of singing. I can knock out a tune. So standing there live with an audience, seeing the whites of Simon Cowell's, Louis Walsh's and Sharon Osbourne's eyes, you know, an iconic panel, was petrifying. You know, and that was something new for me to learn. I'd never worked in a studio singing. It had always been a theatre, so live theatre singing that I'd done before, you know, musicals. So then kind of being asked by sound technicians in a tech run before we go to the live show, you know, can you hear yourself? What do you want? Do you need any more from this speaker? And I go, I don't know what you mean. You just tell me what I can hear. And they go, well, we can't. You need to tell us what you can hear of yourself. And I go, what I can hear, I don't like, was all I was ever saying, you know. So that was a really odd experience for me.
That's why I've never got this. I've never even bothered to ask the question. So when singing stars have earpieces in, is that so they hear themselves?
Well, I didn't have an earpiece, but you had fold back on the stage. So they would say, do you need more of that and speaker?
Oh, God, yeah, I wouldn't have a clue, yeah.
And I would just go, I don't know.
All I know is what I want.
I'm too loud and I don't like the way I sound. So it was just a bit of that, really. Yeah, so that was all something very new to learn.
And you ended up winning it, though, which still must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was a massive shock. But, I think, you know, those shows are funny, really. I think once, you know, Simon Cowell just decided to champion me, I think, a little bit. And then, you know, what he says goes, really. I think people go, oh, yeah, she is really good then. And I don't think it was any better than anybody else that was on that show. Well, better than a few of them. Some of them were dreadful. But, some of the ones that were in the last kind of few were really fabulous. So, I don't know how it all works. But,
oh, no. Yeah, I mean, who knows how that works? Well, still, it's amazing to have done. And I'm a Celeb, obviously. Lots of people have done. I mean, a terrifying experience for me. I couldn't imagine anything worse. But the only reason I would love to do these shows if I was a celebrity is to kind of learn more about myself, I suppose, and how I would cope in these situations. That's why you do it, I suppose.
Yeah, it really is. And to kind of throw yourself into a situation that you would never, ever normally be in. You know, I got to jump out of an airplane, which I would never offer myself up to do something like that, but I did it and I'll never, ever forget it. And it's one of the most amazing moments of my life, really, to jump out of a plane. And it is about being comfortable in your own skin. I mean, kind of, you know, sitting there from, you go to bed when the sun sets and you wake up when the sun rises and there's no devices. There's nothing that you feel totally alienated from the rat race. And so that was glorious. You know, that side of things, I really enjoyed. I was bored. I don't ever remember being bored. And I know lots of people moan about the boredom. I was never bored when I was in there. I think I was just at peace with where I was and just appreciative of being outside and having that experience to go back and relay to your kids when they grow up.
It's an amazing thing to relay, isn't it? It is. Where did you come in it in the end?
Oh, I was out first.
Were you out first?
Yeah, because that year that they did it, they've never done it since. But in the very first vote, they only put 3 people up to be nominated. As opposed to the whole camp. And it was me, Gino DeCampo, and Sam Fox that were up to vote. And you couldn't vote for any other teammates, campmates. You literally, for the very first vote, to vote somebody out, I'd be out of 3 of us. So I kind of feel like they, you know, ruined my chances a little bit.
But I always say I would want to be first out, because then don't you get to stay at the hotel for the a massive long period?
Yeah. I have to say, I did get 2 weeks in the Versace hotel.
Oh my God, I would be buying to be out first. You know what I mean? I'd be a nightmare in there, so I was out first.
Yeah, and to be honest, 10 days. I felt like I'd done my time. I didn't feel like I'd missed out on anything. You know, I'd kind of experienced it as an experience. And it was fine. You know, it was fine really to go then. 10 days in the jungle was more than anyone should.
Anyone else?
Really.
Yeah. God. Yeah.
In their right mind. Yeah.
And then obviously, what's the plan now? I know you've done. I know you're doing loads of stage still.
Yeah.
Let's actually. I'm going to test you here. You've done. See if you can. No actors normally get this right. I'm going to use stage rather than screen. I'll pick some to see who you played in them. 2005. Do you remember who you played in Framed at the Theatre Royal in Norwich?
Judy.
Yes. Okay, well done. God, and we've gone way back in time there.
Do you know why? I remember that because that's when I met my husband, and he just always used to take the Mickey out of me being called Judy for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He'd call me Judy in real life because that was the first thing he'd ever seen me in. So yeah. So I remember it vividly.
That's brilliant. In 2011, you played who at the Mayflower Theatre in Peter Pan?
Mrs. Darling.
Yes, well done.
And one of the mermaids. Yeah.
One of the mermaids. Mrs. Darling. In 2013, I mean, what a show this is. Who did you play? I mean, you're going to know this easy on tour in Hairspray.
Velma.
Of course. What a show to be in. You must have loved that.
I had a ball. I mean, we were on the road for 9 months.
Which is hard, actually. That's tough.
Yeah, because I my little one was only 18 months at the time. So I was on the road with her and my mum, who I had to take everywhere with me in order to babysit and chaperone. So that was a tough call. And I had to leave my eldest at home with her dad. And so we're all kind of split up, really. But it's such a joyous show. It's such a feel-good show that no matter if you were kind of homesick or missing, you know, my other child during the day and whatever, because I would only get to see her at weekends, the minute you went into the theatre and that the overture started on that show, you were just buzzing. And everything else, you forgot everything else that was going on in your life.
Yeah.
And I made some very, very good friends on that show. Mark Benson and Paul Ryder, who I worked with. Sandra Marvin, who was in Emmerdale. Some really lovely friends of mine. Yeah, I had a great, great time.
And I'm guessing a tour, I mean, obviously being in the West End is incredible. Those theatres are amazing. But it must be amazing visiting some of the theatres around the country and also the different audiences. Because, I mean, I'm always astounded when I go in theatre. I've only just discovered Leeds Grand Theatre, which is the smaller, not Leeds Grand Theatre, Leeds. Oh, God, I've forgotten the name of it. But the tiny version. And you go in and it's just the history and there's a feeling in there. Which, I mean, it's incredible, isn't it?
And I did used to love that. You know, we were in a different theatre every week. It was weekly touring. I just got to see the country. You know, Northern Ireland Belfast was a revelation to me, and it was beautiful. And, you know, places that you would never kind of think, and I hadn't visited before. And then it's to say, you know, and every time you moved venues, it felt like a new show. It gave it a new lease of life with a different audience and a different, you know, the different surroundings, the different auditorium. So it kept the show fresh, I tell you. So, yeah, it was a fabulous experience.
And then we'll end with, in 2022, last year, you were in Henry VIII Rebellion. Who did you play?
Henry VI. Yeah, I played Eleanor, the Duchess of Gloucester.
That's right. And that was with the Royal Shakespeare Company, no less.
Yeah, the RSC. I was at the RSC. And that was, I mean, that was a dream come true. So
yeah, how amazing.
I did a season. We did 2 plays. We did parts 2 and parts 3 of Henry the VI. And I absolutely loved it. It was my first time doing Shakespeare. And it was a dream come true.
How did you find learning it? I did Shakespeare when I was young, and it wasn't. And the thought of learning a Shakespeare script now frightens me to death.
I know, but that's because I think we're not taught it properly in school. I do think it's that way. I think we're made to feel scared of it as kids, and then that goes with us through our lives.
And
so what was great for me was to take away all this mystique and all this fear about Shakespeare and see it as basically, I mean, the character that I played, you know, it was quite soapy, you know. Shakespeare's time would have been considered almost like a soap writer, you know. He wrote for the masses, he wrote for the commoners, so you know, and stuff was there is a soap element to Shakespeare when you kind of read it, and it's all about love and intrigue and you know, infidelity and
it's all very worked now, doesn't it? I mean, Tanya Frank was in EastEnders, has done Othello, and they've focused on like the racism and stuff that's there in the text. Yeah. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's totally relatable today. You can really bring it into the modern day. And you know, once you kind of break, it's like learning any lines. I kind of, you know, it's a chore, but when you learn those lines, you get such a sense of pride about having done it, and then go, I understand it. You know, I mean, I can't tell you I understand every word what all the other characters were saying, but I certainly knew what my character was saying at any given time. But it just, you know, you just kind of get used to hearing it, and it is a rhythm, you know, and you just get used to it. And so what I love about that now is I don't fear when if somebody said to me, okay, do you want to do this? Look at this Shakespearean play. I wouldn't go, oh, no, I can't, you know. And yeah. I'm pleased, if nothing else, that it's removed that stigma.
I think my dream, I think, after watching the last Happy Valley, is to work with Sarah Lancashire, I think, now. I mean, have you seen that? She's just incredible.
Yeah, she's just class. I mean, she was class on Coronation Street. You just could see her star quality even then. And it was, you know, it was always going to be that she was going to be huge. Yeah. She's a total talent.
Well, listen, so are you. Honestly, it's a pleasure to have had you on, Lucy. It's amazing to have had you on. You're part of my kind of uni days of growing up with EastEnders, and absolutely love you, and love what a career you've had. So you've been in some of the best
Thanks,
shows.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks so much. Lovely to talk to you.
And you, it's been a pleasure. Take care.
All right, darling. Lots of love.
Lots of love. Bye. The brilliant Lucy Benjamin, thank you so much for joining me on Soap from the Box. There are so many more EastEnders stars for you to listen to right now. Head to wherever you download your podcast. Remember, you can subscribe for free to us at anotherslice.com and get some extra content, including Jacqueline Josser from EastEnders exclusive, if you sign up to us there for free. Remember, loads more EastEnders stars coming your way as well. Good luck to EastEnders and to all the other soaps at the British Soap Awards this very weekend. Of course, episode 1 of season 5 was with Angus, who plays Eric in Hollyoaks. He's up for Best Villain. We'll talk Soap Awards next week, and we'll be back with another episode next week. I'll see you then.